Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It's a pleasure to welcome you here in Frankfurt to our full year numbers today. However, we don't have only the full year numbers today, but of course we have a special announcement today, and I will now hand over to Bernhard Immer for this.
Hello, good morning, and please apologize that I start here while sitting on the desk, because we do not want to alternate too often. So, thank you for joining us this morning. Okay, so in addition to our annual results this morning, we have also made an announcement tonight and early this morning. And you have seen that we are in discussions with CREAT Group Corporation on a possible business combination. And then, of course, I'd like to say now a few words on this possible combination before we go to the annual results and the outlook for 2017. Okay, all right. So we are in this discussion, and you might be aware that CREAT is a leading Chinese investment group with significant expertise in the plasma sector. And we, as a management team, also our colleague Georg Floss is present today, we as a management team see a significant potential in a combination with CREAT to help Biotest further drive our Biotest next level strategy forward, supporting the need for investments in our business. And CREAT would offer to the Biotest shareholders 28.50 per ordinary share and 19 euro per preference share in a public tender offer. And this represents a premium of approximately 55% and 50% respectively compared to the 3 months volume weighted average prior to this announcement. So, and besides that, and so it's a very important part, in particular, of course, for our employees, and we are talking about people and about families. Therefore, this is a key component of a potential agreement we might sign. So, CREAT made clearly intends that they are they would be committed to Biotest when we finalize a business combination agreement, that they keep Biotest headquarters and the corporate seat in Dreieich, Germany, that the Biotest name as well as the brand and product names should be maintained, and very important, that the company should be developed in line with our current plans. This means with the management business plan we have. And this means in particular that the commissioning of the B&L facility and everything associated with it is part of our business plan. So, and of course we would also insist, and but CREAT made this intention that the current shop and bargain agreements should be adhered to, that the co-determination should also remain in place, and that this should be a term of 5 years from the combination agreement. Okay, and now a short comment also on the next steps. As mentioned, that the negotiations on the business combination agreement will be finalized, will be discussed, will be, yeah, and there are key components of that. And if the BCA would be agreed, a formal announcement of the transaction and the intention to launch a takeover offer then would be triggered. And this would then be a voluntary public takeover offer in line with the German Takeover Act. right. But what we like to say, you know, we want it to be transparent with you, also with our employees, that there are negotiations ongoing. We cannot comment and give answers to all questions you might ask, because the BCA and also other parts are under negotiation. So I would say, for the time being, there can be no assurance that a final agreement between the two parties can be reached. Yeah, and that such an offer at the end also will be made. Yeah, and also what are certain prerequisites? Any announcement of a public offer is still and also subject to the finalization of the due diligence, yeah, and the required financing measures. So we keep you posted. We keep the information as soon as we know more. Of course, we will come out. But this is the current status. And along with this announcement we made this morning, we also indicated that we are moving our annual shareholders meeting to a later date. So we are going to postpone it from the planned date of May 10 to a later date, because we want and we agreed that the current management team, but in particular the supervisory board, will remain in place and can accompany these negotiations and a possible transaction unchanged. Because you know that the term for a couple of our members of the supervisory board would end at the next shareholders meeting. And it makes no sense to make any change during this process. Therefore, I think it's a wise thing to move it to a later date in late spring, summer. All right, and from this point onwards, we are going to focus now on the results 2016, on the outlook 2017, and then answer your questions.
Yeah, thank you very much, and good morning.
Thank you very much to share with you the annual figures for 2016. And of course, a lot of things happened in 2016. You recall that we have been able, in January 2017, the end, to sign a contract to restructure our U.S. therapy business in order to focus on the plasma collection and its extension and expansion in the United States further on. And that had, of course, an impact on the reported numbers for 2016. I will explain a little bit later. We see in the continuing operations an increase in sales by 3.5% compared to 2016, and we see even a bigger increase in our earnings before interest and tax of the continuing operations, up to the almost €64 million in 2016, as it has been triggered by the increased sales. But as I said, the earnings profitability was much better developing in 2016 than the sales figure. We opened 6 new plasma collection centers in the United States, 4 in the United States and 2 in Hungary. And as we will share and have shared with you already in the past, we will continue to expand our plasma collection organizations in order to have enough plasma as soon to fill then the capacity you see on the left-hand side on this picture, the new BNL facility, which will go into operations in 2018, 2019, and there we need, of course, plasma for. So Biotest Next Level project is on track, as I mentioned, and as you can see from the outside looking at the building. Let me briefly return to the contract we have signed in January as the result of negotiations we have conducted in November and December, where we have decided to sell the BPC therapy business to ATMA. And with this sale, we have also transferred the facility in Boca Raton to ATMA, because we feel that this facility is suited for especially the production of 5M immunoglobulins, as this facility has proven over the past when NABI-HB, hyperimmunoglobulins, again, the reinfection with hepatitis B, has been produced there. And ADMAR is developing a new hyperimmunoglobulin, RSV hyperimmunoglobulin, and the clinical study material has been produced in this facility. And ADMAR and we are convinced that this facility is also the right place to produce the new RSV hyperimmunoglobulin then later on. So it was transferred to ADMAR. By giving this therapy business to ADMAR, we get consideration 50% minus one share of ADMAR, so that we have access to ADMAR and access to their new hyperimmunoglobulin platform they are offering and they are planning to expand. And of course, ADMAR could also be our future sales and distribution partner in the United States if the business is growing further on. On the other hand, I've said we are strengthening our plasma collection business in the United States, and we have agreed with ADMAR that they will transfer their two collection centers at the 1st of January 2019 to us, so that then we would add two new centers to our already existing 22 centers we have in the United States. Here you see, as I said, we get 50% minus one share of ADMAR as consideration for the therapy business we transfer. We will get also the two plasma centers beginning of 2019. They get the therapy business, and we put also $12.5 million in cash in the facility to facilitate the transition period. With the transfer, $5 million in inventories will be transferred, and we provide a $15 million net working capital loan at a 6% interest rate for 5 years for ADMAR to start their RSV production, RSV hyperimmunoglobulin production in this facility. If they would expand the business and are willing to increase their capital, we would participate with up to $12.5 million in any capital increase they may plan in the near future. By having decided to divest the PPC therapy business, you know that according to the international accounting rules, we have, starting with this decision, to split our business, showing what the continuing operations will have in sales and earnings, and we will also say what the discontinued operations have achieved in sales and in their profitability and earnings. And you can see the discontinued operations, they had sales and revenues of €57.3 million in 2016, and we had a loss of €80.2 million in those activities, which we are transferring to ADMAR. And you see how those minus €80.2 million loss is composed. There's normal operating losses of PPC therapy of minus 30 included. We had to write off BB gum and other inventories in the amount of €10 million. There had been still a goodwill in the books of PPC of BB gum, the BB gum project with €20 million, which has of course to be written off. We had to terminate the Kedrion agreement because we had 1 year before chosen Kedrion as the exclusive partner, distribution partner in the United States, and we had to terminate that in order to be able to transfer the business to ADMAR. We had a positive tax effect because we had been able to release deferred tax liabilities in the amount of $5 million, and they had other issues, including the value difference between the assets we are transferring and the shares and the plasma centers we get, with a minus 9.1 negative influence on the earnings situation. So if you look at our income statement, as we have published it today in our annual report, it starts with sales of €553 million compared to the €535 million in 2015. The earnings before interest and taxes amounted to €64 million in 2016 compared to €37 in the year 2015. We had to, of course, to pay also taxes, and we had also to pay interest on our loans in the amount of €29.4 million, which, as you can see, is relatively high compared to the 10.3 million we spent in 2015. And the reason for this increase, so most of you remember that we had found a settlement with the tax authorities and the public prosecutor in the amount of 14.5 million, and those 14.5 million euros are included in the 29.4 million and explains the increase mainly. So then we have, of course, to show the loss in the discontinued operations activities of minus 80 million, so that in the end, the earnings after tax in Biotest Group, unfortunately, ended up with a minus 45.7 million. Looking at the sales development, you see the increase of 3.5% is mainly due to increased plasma sales in the United States. That's also the explanation why the number, the revenue number in North and South America went up from 84 million to 117 million in 2016. We are operating at full capacity level here in Germany, so further growth can only be achieved by plasma sales, mainly by plasma sales, by expanding our plasma collection organization. And as long as we don't need the collected plasma for our own purposes, we would be able to sell it. So that explained the increase in sales in last 2016. And that will be also the growth driver over the next couple of years till we are able to produce new products in the B&L facility and start selling those new products out of the new and then expanded capacity. If we look at the balance sheet, you will see that despite the loss we experienced in 2016, the equity ratio is still with 38.7% relatively strong. You see an increase in the non-current assets. This is, of course, as you can imagine, mainly due to the fact that we have invested heavily in the Biotest Next Level project, so that 80 million are due an increase in fixed assets and explaining the increase in the non-current assets. On the non-current asset side, you see a reduction from 587 million to 467. This is mainly due to the fact that we have been able to reduce our working capital needs, and of course we spent the cash we had collected before to pay the investments in B&L, so that was reducing the cash and other asset position in the amount of almost 90 million, and that explains the reduction of the current asset position. Here you see the operating cash flow before changes in working capital amounted to 90 million. We have been able to reduce the working capital needs by 15.5 million and we spent 31.1 million in interest and tax expenses, so that the cash flow from operating activities at the year end amounted to 74.7 million in total. Let me give you briefly an outlook and a guidance for 2017. I said we are operating at full capacity in Germany with our facility. We are be able to sell a little more of plasma due to the fact that we have increased and opened new centers last year. So we can expect only a low single-digit percentage increase in our sales in 2017. We expect an EBIT and earnings before interest and tax in the range of 46 to 48 million, which is much lower than the number we have, the 39 million we have achieved this year. And this is due to the fact that we have, of course, increased Biotest Next Level costs of about 60 to 70 million in 2017, including the clinical development costs for IgG, IgM, and fibrinogen. And this number alone is almost doubled as high as it was in 2016. We are still spending 10 million for the still ongoing studies with monoclonal antibodies. And we have to give the caveat that the continued tense situations in crisis regions, especially in Middle East, where we are pretty strong, as you know, might also influence our earnings position in 2017. So with those factors, keeping in mind, I think we can expect then the 46 to 48 million as earnings compared to the 69 million we had in 2017. And with that, we turn now to the overall strategy.
Okay, thank you, Michael. And so overall, to say the plasma market is attractive. So you see that its worldwide market demand is continuously growing, so it remains an attractive segment. And here I'm focusing on the IVIG and the subcutaneous application, and that's a good parameter for the overall industry. You know, if you see here that it's going up, then the entire plasma industry is developing. So the growth rate is more or less stable. You see average growth rate expected going forward, and last time is 6 to 7%. It varies from region to region. The strongest growth is in the so-called regions of the world, so outside Europe and the United States. And so on one side, what are drivers and where do we stand? You know, is there still an upside? And on this slide, you see also the usage of intravenous IVIG in certain areas. So on this part of the slide, the highest consumption is in Australia and in the United States, with around about, 200 kilogram IVIG consumption per million population. So that's the standard reference value also, yeah. And then you have in the key European market, so that's a second column more or less, you see range between 90 to 130, and this is in the Nordic countries. Nordic countries are stronger. Then you have France, Switzerland, and Austria, also with a high consumption. And then, you know, other countries like Germany in the middle. And then it's going down, you know, for Eastern Europe and in the region of the world. But the growth is in particular also there. And there are positive drivers and also some constraints. The positive drivers are more indications, more healthcare coverage, more reimbursement, and the payers are willing to pay. On the other side, this might be good or bad. You know, it depends how you see it. It's key the availability of plasma to a certain degree could also limit the growth, could limit. Therefore, it's key in all companies, and we also we need to ensure that we have enough access to plasma. So building up plasma centers, not only in the United States, but also in other territories of the world, is important. Then, also still today, what's happened, there are regulatory barriers, and this restricts global trade, in this case, global exchange of plasma and or products. And I just like to highlight, on one side, you could always use US plasma, for products sold all over the world. If you have access to US plasma and you produce plasma from this source, you can sell it everywhere. And I come now to China. In China, only the importation of albumin is allowed, and it needs to come from the source needs to use US plasma. And the price of albumin in China is the highest in the world. So, and also in China, there are certain limitations that no other products can be imported into this country, only albumin. You know, there was a discussion and will be a discussion, but this is an upside. That's a clear upside also to have products bringing to this market as there is a shortage. Coming now to hemophilia, to factor 8. Factor 8 is for our business, for biotests, important. We are until today in this segment of the plasmatic factor 8 products only. You see here the growth is in the range of 2%. What we have seen, you know, since I would say last year, that it stabilizes. There is no erosion anymore towards the recombinant factors. And the reason for that, there was a large study, heavily discussed, published in the New England Journal of Medicine, the CPIT study, which indicated that the plasma factor 8 has a lower safety. Let's say the correct word is they have lower adverse events with regard to immune tolerance. So patients have lower rate of antibodies against factor VIII, and this is a very important point. And this study clearly indicated that the plasmatic factors are, with regards to this, superior. So it helps us, it stabilizes the percentage of plasmatic factors used compared to the recombinant ones. That's one part of the message. But the other one, because we have a very good relationship with key customers in the German-speaking countries, and that's for us extremely important, we signed an agreement with another company that we are going to distribute from the beginning of March onwards also recombinant factor VIII called Vihuma. So that's coming in the first weeks of April. We start in Germany, and then we have also the rights for Switzerland and Austria, so this will come later. Okay, so I'm going back. You know, I go back to a slide which is almost unchanged since mid of 2015. What are we doing? What is our strategy? What are the key pillars of our strategy? So it's very important to drive also organic growth. So we need to broaden our product portfolio. We are doubling our production capacity. We are improving our manufacturing output, so the yield, the efficiency. And we strive to have more products coming out of 1 liter plasma. So this means we are focusing on plasma. We are focusing since the middle of 15 on plasma. You saw from Michael that we are still investing some money, and it's going down. The only activity which is currently ongoing are phasing out of the studies. It costs still money, but we are not committing to do anything else. Our focus is plasma, and I repeat, this is a mantra since June 2015, focus on plasma. Then, related to this, the management attention and everything needs to be focused on our future and our growth outlook and our profitability outlook, and that's Biotest Next Level. Heavy investments, opportunity to launch new products, opportunity also to launch unique products like IgM. So that's what we are doing. And we always talk that we are open for partnerships, however, whatever they look like, whether it's manufacturing partnerships. And now we spoke this morning about a negotiation with a broader collaboration which goes beyond the achievements we had so far. Okay, short, you know, I'm going to say just a few words about where we stand with IgG, IgM, fibrinogen, and a short comment also on BT62 and BT63, but only a short comment. All right, IgG next generation. So that's our lead compound. We are moving nicely forward. We have, it's a master product of our Biotest Next Level production plant. We started phase 3 studies in the first two indications, so-called PID, a primary immune deficiency. The study started in Europe and the United States. Almost all adult patients have been included already in the study, and now we have to also include children. And this is just started. So here we are absolutely on time. The other study is also ongoing. It's a must, ITP. Okay, idiopathic thrombocytopenia study, immune disease, where the patients do not build any platelets and bleed because of that. The study started. And the other one, that's a large study in neurologic indications. This is very important. You know, I think 30% of the market, 30-35% are in the neurology indications. And here we are starting also a study in the fourth quarter in the United States and Europe, and we have a discussion and agreed with the authorities on the study design. Okay, this chart I can skip to summarize everything we are doing, quite complex with IgG next generation according to the regulations of the FDA and according to the regulations from the European agencies. So here, that's a unique product. You know it. That's IgM, patients with severe pneumonia. We did a study, a high medical need. Patients are dying, you know, on the intensive care unit. No big changes in the last years happened. You know, the mortality rate for these patients is still between 25 to 50%. So a lot of patients do not survive if they come to the hospital with this disease. And we did a phase 2 study with 160 patients. And these are the key data, overall mortality reduced. And then it's always important, and everybody in the world is asking, can you define the patients which will have the best benefits, that we can really treat these patients and do not treat the others? So we looked in detail, and we identified that there are two factors which influence the mortality in this population. The one factor was very simple, unbelievable. It's a low IgM level. And the other one is an inflammation parameter, so patients with an inflammation CRP value. And there we saw when we applied these parameters, and this is relevant because if you look at the number of patients, you know, compared to this one, almost two-thirds of the patients had this criteria, fulfilled this criteria. And the outcome, if you look at these patients, the mortality reduction is and was 50% or even higher. A mortality reduction in this population in this range is absolutely outstanding. Okay, so therefore we need to concentrate on that. We need to do this right. We need to do the study, you know, and need to go forward and do the right investments and the right monitoring. So there is, here it's not only a potential for this indication, but also going beyond. IgM plays a key role in the regulation of human beings during certain diseases, whether they have undergo transplantation, whether they have these severe infections. So there is a huge potential beyond the pneumonia. But we are only focusing now on pneumonia first, and then other things to come. So there are a lot of upsides. The publication is planned in Lancet, yeah, and the study design of the phase 3 study has been discussed with the FDA as well as with the Paul Ehrlich Institute, and we intend to start the phase 3 study with around about 450 to 600 patients in the fourth quarter 2017. That's a relevant investment also, but this is a very important study. So fibrinogen, to make it short, we are in phase 3 in a smaller indication for the so-called genetic defect, so patients have, they cannot produce fibrinogen, they have what's called congenital fibrinogen deficiency, so they have a genetic defect. And the other study we are doing in patients which are bleeding heavily during surgery. So we agreed this design also with the Paul Ehrlich Institute and others, and we are starting the study in the middle of 2017, a phase 3 study. Okay, and just a few words about one of these hyperimmunoglobulins, this R002. We have the rights outside the United States in certain territories. But just to say that the data which had been presented by ATMA are really very good. So I'm just going to focus on this is always the endpoint of a study in this indication. So patients, they will be assessed. What is the rate of serious bacterial infections. Yeah, so it is the authorities and also the community who treats the patients. They look always at this number. What is the rate of serious bacterial infection per year in these patients? And, for example, as a patient's treated, there was zero. There was zero, and this is the best data ever published for an IVIG product. So needs to be done a little more, you know. Of course, you have to focus not only on these PID patients, but you're also looking at other patients which are exposed to viral infections, for example, in stem cell transplantation and bone marrow transplantation. So that's the next step. But the first step is get the registration, and the second step would be line extension. Okay, short comment on antibodies 62. Basically, we are doing nothing anymore. the patients, there are still a couple of patients in the studies. We have still one study ongoing in multiple myeloma, a hematological disease, and we have one study ongoing in solid tumors. There are still patients in the study because they are treated well. We cannot stop. The patients are doing well in the study, so they do not have progressive disease, so they will be observed, but we are not going to invest as a company alone in this product. Okay, and the last, anybody, is BT63. Here you know, we completed this first part of the study. This was is a study in patients with an immune disease called lupus erythematodes, and we had at the interim analysis, we asked an independent, this was planned in the study, we asked an independent safety monitoring board what to do. They had a look at the data and they recommended to continue. And we are continuing. We are now recruiting the last patients, the last 18 patients in the study here. And the recruitment will be completed in end of May. And then 3 months later, the study is completed, and then we'll see. Okay, and these antibodies are up for partnering and or for spin-out. So Biotest Next Level, this is the focus of our attention. This is where we need to do things right. I think it's the right thing to do, but we need to do it right. So this is the facility here over there. We'll see another picture later on. The facility and energy center, and that's our campus. This is okay. It's animated. So this is a BNL and the power plant. It's ongoing. Then here we have also our fill and packaging unit expanded, and here we also moved into the new plasma receiving area, and also the labs for viral testing has been completed. It was also investment of around about 15-18 million completed. And the scientists and other people went in the beginning of the beginning of 16. All right, why do we do this? So it's sometimes important to know why are you doing this. Coming back today, quite simple. Today, out of 1 liter plasma, we get 3 products, volume products: IgG, albumin, and factor 8. Cost of plasma is expensive. 60% of our manufacturing or cost of goods are related to the plasma costs. So therefore, it's very clear you need to do as much as you can with 1 liter plasma. So currently, we achieve revenue out of 1 liter plasma in the range of around about 250 to 300 euros. Yeah, and our current fractionation capacity is 1.3 billion liters, and we get out 6 tons of immunoglobulins and 42 tons of albumin. So, and now we are talking about Biotest Next Level. So it will be not only then these 3 products, but we will have also another one, IgM, and another one. So we will have 5 products out of 1 liter plasma, so more or less the same costs, more or less. I'll come to this figure in a minute. But the revenue with these new products per liter is going up. And in parallel, we have also higher fractionation capacity, almost doubling. And you see also the output doubled for immunoglobulin albumin. So and this translates then at the end of the day just to the revenue and the gross profit. So the gross profit will go up from around about 100 to 300 euros per liter. So the key in our industry, is to have a maximal utilization out of plasma. Not 1 or 2 or 3, other 3 is a must, but going on more and more and more. Because the cost basis will remain more or less unchanged. Yeah, more or less unchanged. So incremental cost of around about 20 euros per liter plasma for a new product. But the revenue is, of course, going up over proportional. So, and this is how it looks today. You know, here's the interior fitting work is almost completed. So, first people will move in the labs in soon, in June, July. Yeah, so in this part, first people in the room with QC labs. And the technical installations, power, heating, air conditioning, etc., you know, are in operation, and already the qualification is ongoing. So it's, and we invested 110 million CAPEX in 2016, right? Okay, and this is just one short impression from the inside. Also, the process equipment, you know, it's all the stainless steel stuff here. The installation of process equipment is almost completed, and the first qualifications, that's relevant, the qualification of the process equipment has started. So, okay, now I stop, and we can then have questions. Okay, our focus is number one, plasma, expand our plasma collection network. We are going to increase the plasma centers per year, 4 to 5 centers, new centers. So this year we plan to have to open 5 new centers. Then the other is focus on biotests next level. The construction work is on track. The clinical trials, the phase 3 trials, are all already started, or others will start in 17. So IgG next generation fibrinogen and IgM. And, okay, we are doing also for our existing products like pentaglobin, hemoctine, and cytotex, or the life cycle activities to broaden the indications and to have more approvals in other countries. So, I stop here, and now we are here for questions. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much. We now have your questions. It would be nice if you mention your name and your company. Marietta.
Thank you. I actually have a lot of questions about your profitability, but before I dive into that, I'd just like to ask you one question on the deal you announced. So I suppose there's no point asking you how CREAT arrived at their numbers, but my question to you as sort of representatives of all shareholders would be whether you think that the differential between, just in percentage terms, between the premium for the pref and the ordinary shares is fair and justifiable, and you know what you think the reasons are that would actually justify the sharp difference in the price. And somewhat related to that, I mean, is it fair to assume, just from the way the offer was framed, that there is no minimum threshold being discussed that needs to be met in the tender process in order for CREAT to stick with the deal, i.e., would they basically be willing to go through with the deal and just accept the Ogle stake if that was the only shares that were offered to them, i.e., if no shares were tendered due to maybe some of the preference shareholders just preferring to stick with their shareholding and including their ordinary shareholding. And, yeah, maybe I'll stop here and, you know, I can either then ask my profitability questions or later in the session, whatever you prefer.
Yeah, thank you very much. You rightly stated or started with the statement that those questions are probably more directed to CREAT than not to us. But let me try to give you at least some ideas around the answers they may would have given you if they would have been here. With regard to the pricing, indeed, we cannot say anything what the reasons had been to determine the prices as they had been issued last night. For them, with the 28.5 euros for the ordinary shares and 19 euros for the preference shares. And if you look at the 3 months weighted average price, you will see that in the short term there is a gap in the premium, as you have mentioned. But please consider that over a longer term period, the preference shares went up by much more than the ordinary shares did. And if you look probably on a longer perspective, this kind of difference would level out. So that would be probably the answer of CREAT if they would have been asked this question. We should also mention again that we are informing about some kind of interim status of negotiations here, negotiations with us as Biotest AG, but also with Ogle, the existing majority shareholder on the ordinary share side, and therefore not all and every conditions have been mentioned, and I wouldn't exclude that the final offer would contain any kind of minimum threshold, but this is not what we can say yet.
But can I just clarify, I mean, given that you represent your shareholders and you said you welcome the discussions, which is, of course, a very broad term, and it doesn't necessarily mean that you fully endorse the actual price that was offered, but do you overall think that there is actually a reason why any bidder would potentially pay a lot more for the ordinary shares than for the preference shares, and you can actually, if it all came to fruition, you could really recommend to all of your shareholders that they should sell their shareholdings, even though it means selling very similar assets from a purely financial return perspective at very different prices?
Okay, as Marietta, the point is, number one, we are in negotiation. So everything is a theoretical exercise, what we are doing today. So number two is what we said, and this is what we are thinking. We are welcoming these discussions, and this means we see a value. We see, as a management, sees a clear value in a potential transaction. As in transaction means that we would be part of a larger group. So this is what we are saying, and this is the only thing we are saying, because we will look at everything, you know, at the end of the day. But we see there's an upside for the company, and at the end there's an upside for everyone. There's an upside if this takes place, if this transaction takes place. There's an upside for all stakeholders in the company. And our job is to assess the overall value which might be offered. Yeah, I'm very careful because it's negotiation. The overall value which might be offered at the end of the day, which includes a price, which includes other terms of a BCA, other commitments. So at this point in time, we are clearly supporting, and welcoming these negotiations. This is what we can say. Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you. Do you want me to ask my profitability questions now, or hand over to somebody else first and jump back in the queue later?
Please, if you'd like to continue.
Great, thank you. So actually, as usual, there's a whole bunch of profitability questions. So one is, you showed us your gross margins on slides 31 and 32, and I think the logic for the increase is very, very clear. However, my impression is that the gross profit per liter of plasma, both today and the one you envisage in the future, has changed quite dramatically, substantially in a positive direction from the last time I looked at these slide decks sometime last year. So I was just wondering what the reason was for that. And then just related to the profitability in 2016 and 2017, can you just give us the spend for monoclonal antibodies in 2016, full B&L extra costs in 2016, and then the B&L cost for 2017 broken down by R&D and other costs. And what I'm really driving at here is there actually a change in the underlying profitability of the business between 2016 and 2017? And if so, what's driving that? And what about the B&L cost going forward? Is this basically like, you know, except for the R&D costs, a one-off this year? Or should we expect them to keep on rising up until the day that B&L is really fully up and running? And then another B&L related question, if you could just give us the CapEx spend on B&L to date and how much is still outstanding. And then my very final question, I think you mentioned in the past a margin target of about 18% EBIT margin, sometime beyond 22, if I understand correctly, tied to B&L. Can you give us a rough feel for when you expect that to be reached or what the sort of trigger factors would be, i.e. is there sort of a minimum level of sales that you need for IgM, fibrinogen, next generation in the aggregate in order to support that number, or how should we get our arms around that? Thank you very much.
Okay, as I start, you know, so many questions, I was not able to write everything down, but Michael started, you know. Okay, let's start. trigger factor very clearly is the ramp-up. How fast will the ramp-up occur? You know, how fast will we utilize the full capacity of the new facility? That's very clear. And therefore, you know, if you take a ramp-up period of 3 years, yeah, then you will have another year compared to have a 4 or 5 years ramp-up period for full utilization of the facility. And this depends always on in which markets are you going to sell? Are you going to do it alone, or are you working with a partner? So there, the trigger factor is ramp-up period. The ramp-up period is triggered by the territories you're going to sell, and also the way how you're going to sell it. Are you doing it alone, or do you go with a partner in the certain territories?
So in other words, worst case should be 2024 as a 5-year ramp-up period.
So, so you can say, you know, if we assume, you know, a 3 years ramp up period, a 3 years really full ramp up period, then we would be 2022-23. So yeah, it's not, you know, it's always a calendar year. So it's 2022-23, and then if it's faster, then it's shorter. If it's longer, then it takes longer. So, but the trigger is utilization. Then the other question was investment cost. I'm not commenting on everything. I'm commenting on 2016 and 2017. 2016, the CapEx was, $110, the 110 in 16 CapEx. And in 2017, it's 60 CapEx. And then we have the R&D costs. You know, it's CapEx. Yeah. And then the overall, Michael will summarize, I think it's 200-something, but Michael will give you the exact number. And then we have also the R&D costs. We have the R&D costs, which is part of, we show R&D, we show B&L, and include the related R&D costs. And here we have, let's call it fibrinogen development, we have this IgM development, and here we have IgG next generation, intravenous and subcutaneously. And as a number, you know, it's round about 300 million euros.
For what?
For this together.
For the next years.
For the next years.
Sorry, so taking these three products to market.
Yes.
Taking these three products to market will cost you another 300 million.
We have to do all these studies. We have process development activities. We have these costs overall. Yeah. So it's, and I summarize it. Okay, and another question is, you know, not only revenue, but in particular also profitability numbers are, of course, influenced by certain price assumptions you are having for your products. Yeah, so it depends on your price assumptions you have for IgG, but it's also, in our case, it's important the price assumptions we have for IgM. And, it's value-based pricing. Yeah, everything needs to be value-based. You have to justify your pricing. And we are doing market research. So we are working, talking to payers, we are talking to customers. You know, we are doing a systematic pricing assumptions. So therefore, there was a slight change in the pricing assumptions, in particular for IgM, following the data we saw from the clinical study. Everything is always about what data can you show which support a value, which support a price.
Let me continue with some details. The monoclonal antibody spending R&D in 2016 had been, if I recall correctly, 23 million. It will be in 2017, 10 million. We spent on BNL in 2016, 37 million. Those are 10 million in ramp-up costs. New people already, you know, being active in the facility with the first qualification and validation activities, commissioning the first infrastructure, media equipment, and things like that. And we have spent on those three BNL-related R&D projects, IgG next generation, IgM, and fibrinogen, 27 million. So the 37, 10 million ramp up, 27 R&D. Next year, we are going to spend between 60 and 70 million. If I look at the upper end with 70 million, that would be 15 million in ramp-up costs and 55 million for conducting the phase 3 studies. Bernard Ehmer has mentioned we have already started and are, of course, are getting more expensive as more patients we are including in those studies. The total CapEx for BNL up to the end of 2016 is in the magnitude of 160 million. So the 110 or probably a little bit less in 2016, and there we started already, as you know, in 2014 and 2015. So altogether till end of 2016, 160, and we have another 110 to go to finalize the facility. So we will probably spend 60 to 70 million in 2017, and the remaining then 20 or 30 million in 2018 to really get a commissioned facility then ready. With regards to the 18% EBIT ratio, I guess this number is a little bit loose number here, because I mentioned this, I guess, when we talked about the profitability in the context of BNL, means if we look at BNL separately, just producing those five products and selling them. If we look at this profitability for the whole group, including plasma sales, including the activities we are currently conducting, we still have in the future, of course, our hyperimmunoglobulin sales. We still have Intratect sales and other things as well. I think it's a fair statement to expect an EBIT or a profitability of 15 to 18%. You know, as soon as BNL products are being sold in the market on a higher rate, not just the first sale, the very first year. So after ramp up, so I guess you can recognize in the year 2022 to 2023.
The point is there was one time, and therefore I repeated.
Yeah.
There was one time in one report. You know, we had a press conference, and that was the wrong year stated. So therefore, to be very clear, it's 22, 23,
yeah.
Not earlier, because someone, I'm not sure whether the person is in the room, but there was a wrong quote from our last call we had in January. So therefore, it's important, it's 22, 23,
yeah.
Not earlier.
Ja, mein Name ist Peter Semm. Ich habe gerade nachgeschaut. Ich bin seit 1998 Aktionär, habe so ein kleines Päckchen und habe schon viele Tiefen und Höhen mit Biotest durchlebt. Ich danke Ihnen, Herr Dr. Ehmer und Herr Dr. Ramroth, für die positive Darstellung. Ich muss mich eigentlich nicht entschuldigen, aber ich spreche Deutsch, nicht Englisch. Ich möchte mich bedanken für die positive Darstellung, die eigentlich für mich nur den Schluss zulässt, kein Stück zu verkaufen, und Ihre Argumente sprechen eher dafür, dass man zu den jetzigen Kursen nachkaufen sollte. Generell ist es natürlich so, dass ich begeistert bin, wenn jemand an Biotest interessiert ist. Der kann auch sehr gerne sehr, sehr viel investieren, und ich hätte mir erhofft, dass einfach der Großaktionär wechselt, das heißt eben Great an die Stelle von Ogel tritt und dann weiter finanziert und sich beteiligt. Wäre, denke ich, für uns alle hervorragend. Jetzt würde mich als erste Frage interessieren, ob auch LBBW mitmacht, denn die machen ja, die haben ja, soweit ich weiß, auch so um die 25% Anteil der Stämme, denn die werden ja sicher auch schon gefragt worden sein. Ich habe heute Morgen in die Gesichter der Biotest-Mitarbeiter geschaut, und die waren eigentlich alle positiv gestimmt, die haben alle gestrahlt. Ich bin offenbar einer der wenigen, der total entgeistert war, wie also diese Nachricht kam. Denn ich bin einfach der Meinung, dass auch aufgrund Ihrer Aussagen dieses sogenannte Angebot der chinesischen Firma aus meiner Sicht ein Witz ist. Speziell eben auch, was den Kurs der Vorzüge angeht. Denn die meisten Aktien oder die meisten Aktionäre haben ja Vorzugsaktien. Und diese Differenz halte ich eigentlich für indiskutabel. Und ich kann nur hoffen, dass viele, viele Gegenbieter aufwachen und hoffentlich noch was tun und die Chinesen vielleicht ein bisschen ausboten. Hätte ich nichts dagegen. Besten Dank.
Okay, was ist? Was denn? Okay, so it's okay if I answer in English. So the question the comment was that it was not seen as appropriate from the audience with preference shares, and the company is in a good position, and so there is a certain dissatisfaction, in particular with regards to the offering from CREAT. So I summarized what in English what I just heard. So okay, let me go back. What we expressed in our press conference. The number one, it's a negotiation ongoing. We inform about an ongoing negotiation with CREAT. That's number one. So we have no deal and we have no offer. Number two is that we welcome the discussion because we have overall we have to look at the situation in general. What is the value which might be offered in general to the company and for all different stakeholders? And of course, at the end of the day, you know, we have. At the end of the day, we will write also a statement or no statement. So this is at the end of the day. When an offer is coming and when we are in the process, then we will also have we will be asked to say a few words. But what we can say today, the overall concept of the negotiations, including everything, is welcomed by the management board as well as by the supervisory board. And of course we know that there might be different perspectives from different angles of different stakeholders, not only the shareholders but from other people also. But for the time being, what we know, where we are, this is the only thing we can say, but we will also be very open and transparent when the situation is coming that we have to make our public and official recommendation. But for the time being, it's that's our position, that we see a potential for the company if these negotiations will be completed successfully.
Then there was a question what the other major shareholder on the honorary side, and you probably meant the Kreissparkasse Biberach, will do. The only thing we can confirm is that CREAT is in negotiations with Ogle, the investment vehicle of the founders' families. What about the situation and position of other shareholders? We cannot tell you anything. We are not aware of anything on that.
Your data and company information, does that mean that any other interested party who wants to get access and do due diligence is allowed to do that as well, or is that some kind of exclusivity you are giving them for whatever reason? Thanks.
It's always a difficult decision for a management board to decide how much information you would share under special circumstances with one single party or person. And you can imagine there are a lot of people knocking on our doors and want to know much more things. But we are normally, of course, restricted to what we say in public, and that's all. Here we felt that the intention of CREAT to enter into a serious deal and a serious transaction had been so and valued in a way and validated by the Ogle family as well as by supervisory board and us, that we said, okay, under those circumstances, we will give them access to some special, some more information in a normal due diligence based on, as you can imagine, a very tight secrecy agreement.
Thank you. All right. Okay.
Maybe just one quick follow-up question on BNL. So if ever the current transaction were not to go through and you were just to remain a standalone company, or, you know, even if it does go through, is there any risk that you might need to raise any additional capital sort of ahead of or around the inauguration of the BNL facilities? Just because, I mean, obviously you still have quite a bit of CapEx spend ahead. It's probably very, very difficult to fully predict working capital needs ahead of that sort of capacity expansion. And then I think, I mean, you mentioned very high clinical trial costs, and I guess with those, there's also always it's quite difficult to really do any very, very accurate calculations. So is there a risk that if there's, let's say, a slight delay on BNL, or you just require higher working capital, or you're going to maybe expand some of the studies a little bit, or they take a little bit longer, that you would actually feel more comfortable going back to the market? So do you feel with your equity position and your cash flow generation from the current business, you're definitely good until BNL is fully ramped?
Of course, indeed, if we would start to increase our R&D portfolio even more to get to even more products out of 1 liter plasma and would increase that, we wouldn't exclude that we need more money and maybe also fresh capital from an equity point of view. But without having said that, we are, as you know, for the time being fully financed. And we have, and you have seen that on the cash position I referred to, we had collected in advance enough money to finance the CapEx situation to finalize the BNL project. And we have secured also the financing for the 70 million, 60 to 70 million CapEx this year. So from that perspective, we are fully financed. As I said, if we have further plans, and we'll expand that, we will see how we can finance those additional activities.
Weiss Reuters, can you give us some insight on the time frame of the transaction, of the negotiations? When do you expect completion of the talks?
Yes, it's always difficult to say. You know, if you, I think you are aware, negotiations are unpredictable. Sometimes small things can become big. So therefore, it's a speculation. Whatever I say, it might be right or might be wrong.
Yep.
So, of course, we are working on it. We are seriously discussing, you know, the BCA. We are seriously discussing other parts, but in particular the BCA. And we felt that it's the right time to inform, because we already progressed. But here, prediction to make. You know, you quote me tomorrow, you know, and then I was wrong, and so therefore I'm really very careful to have any.
Yeah.
It could go fast, but it could take longer. It could still not go through. So we have still these possibilities. Sorry. Difficult.
Ich habe. Alfred Schneider ist meine Frage. Ist mein Name. Ich habe auch eine Frage zur Transaktion. Dieses Business Combination Agreement hat es ja erstmals gegeben, nach meiner Kenntnis, damals als Unicredit die Hypovereinsbank übernommen hat, Bayerische Hypovereinsbank übernommen hat. Und es hat es danach noch ein paar Mal gegeben. Letztendlich war es aber immer nichts anderes als der Versuch einer Machtübernahme, ohne dass eben ein Gewinnabführungs- und Beherrschungsvertrag geschlossen werden musste. Ist Bestandteil der Überlegungen im Hinblick auf dieses BCA, Business Combination Agreement, auch, dass geplant ist, wenn die Übernahme erfolgreich verläuft, dass dann eben auch solche aktienrechtlichen Strukturmaßnahmen angedacht werden, oder bleiben die auf jeden Fall außen vor?
The question was about the intention of the business combination agreement. We have mentioned it. We started negotiations about a business combination agreement to give securities and to get guarantees for, as we have listed here, for the site, for headquarters site, for the legal structure, for employment levels, for the possibility for the management to continue to pursue our plans we have, in especially to finalize in a way we have started the BNL project and all that. So all that is the purpose of this business combination agreement, and nothing more is intended to be included from our side, and nothing more is asked for from the other side up to now.
Danke. Mein Name ist Klaus Schote von der Solventis. Herr Dr. Ima, Sie haben ja nun wiederholt gesagt, dass Sie das begrüßen und dass diese Verhandlungen, die derzeit laufen, ist es die finanzielle Stärke des Partners, ist es die Möglichkeit, stärker in den chinesischen Markt hineinzuwachsen mit Produkten? Wenn ich es richtig verstanden habe, wird ja bislang nur Albumin eingeführt in China. Also da müsste sich ja auch die Politik ändern, dass ich mehr Produkte dort einführen kann oder ich muss vor Ort produzieren. Wo ist da der, wie sehen Sie das? Vielleicht können Sie es noch ein bisschen ausführen.
Ja, wie gesagt, es ist so, also sorry, ja. All right, it's complementary. It's not overlapping. What you would see in case it's going to happen, but there are certain strengths and gaps which can be filled. Yeah? So the part is, if you look a little back, you know, and you say, what is the intention? And you know, I cannot speak for Greyhound, but I only quote what they mentioned in 2016. The strategy is to become not only a global player, but become a key player in the plasma market. Yeah, and a key player in the plasma market, here we're talking about all territories in the world. Here we're talking about closing the gap to the big three. Yeah, and this means it's the idea is that by having presence in all the territories, by broadening the product portfolio, by bringing in expertise, whatever geographic expertise, technical expertise, commercial expertise, regulatory expertise, by bringing this together, there's an opportunity that a combination of the companies could be very beneficial for everyone compared to the alternative.
Herr Wiebrecht, letzte Reihe.
Markus Wiebrecht, Mind First. Getting back to the margin question, I know that most of the interest is on the Create deal announcement, but maybe that's partly related to that as well. Your midterm guidance, so if I understand correctly, 15 to 18% EBIT margin once the new products from the BNL are up and running and are sold, so somewhere way beyond 2020, appears low to me, to be honest. I mean, if I adjust the EBIT you reported last year for the BNL upfront and ramp-up costs, and I adjust for the monoclonal antibody costs, I get already more than 20% EBIT margin adjusted for last year. And if you take a guidance for this year, you actually get to slightly higher EBIT margins towards 21%. So assuming that once BNL is up and running, you sell the products, you tell us you more than triple your gross profit for the five new products or five total products you will be selling by then. Why is your margin guidance then still so low? And why don't you be, you know, a bit more upbeat, especially within these negotiations with a potential acquirer? I mean, you could sell yourself way better, I think.
So,
thanks.
Yeah, okay. Thank you for the question. And the point is, if we have zero R&D costs, for example, because we are now, we have R&D costs in the range between 8 to 12, 10%. So And we will keep on the costs at a certain level. We will have also in the future, even after the so-called B&L products will be on the market, we will continue to have R&D costs. We will continue to invest in new products, in the development of new plasma proteins. And therefore, you know, it will be a stable, more or less, expenditure, I call it investment, in the future going on. So therefore you cannot just complete and say, all right, B&L is done, the investments are done, your R&D costs of 10% or 11% are gone, and then everything would be able. Yes, if you adjust everything and you say, but that's not reality. The reality is that we in the company and everyone in the industry, we need to invest, we need to improve the products, we need to bring new plasma products, you know, to remain competitive or even strengthen the competitive position. So this is included always in our numbers, you know. And we basically, R&D are remaining costs, and that will be in the standard. You know, we have not yet defined, of course, these projects. We are defining certain projects, and we are doing preclinical activities. Yeah, so, but we include it in our case, in our assumptions, and even if it's not yet defined, what will it be? So we will, but in our case, in our assumptions, we have always these R&D costs as part of, even if it's not yet clearly defined, how it will look like, which product it will be.
Fully understood. So what would be then your R&D expenditure and percent of sales long-term with B&L up and running, et cetera?
You know, in general, you know, this is also what we said, is basically because we had, when we invested in the monoclonal antibody, we had, compared to the industry, very high R&D costs. The ratio was, we were in the range of 14, even a little higher, so we were in 14%. If you look at our competitors, you know, they range from 6 to 8%, and there's one company is even below. So, and we, our target is between 8, 9% in on a stable basis ongoing, also beyond the so-called B&L.
Thank you. Just another quick question, sorry, on your margin slide on page 32. So I'm just trying to understand in volume terms. I mean, I appreciate if you take, you know, your first liter of plasma and you make all these products you're describing, then your revenue is currently about 300 euros and that will be cranked up to more than 500 euros. But I'm just trying to understand in volume terms. I mean, can you really, as you ramp up B&L, sell everything that you squeeze out of each liter of plasma, or do you get to the point where, you know, as you grow your IVIG business, maybe you get to the point where just purely from a volume demand perspective, you can't sell the incremental fibrinogen, you squeeze out of the incremental plasma. I mean, does this calculation basically that you have on slide 32, does that really relate to every liter of plasma on average in the future, or is that just sort of, you know, the first liters of plasma?
Yeah, this relates to liter of plasma, you know, and therefore it's not one number. Therefore, it's a range. But you're completely right. You know, this is your assumption, your background of your question is correct. Yeah, that's the assumption. That's the assumption.
All right. So thank you very much.
Last important question.
Thilo Müller, MF Fund Advisory. Mr. Emer, I get your message starting in June 2015, refocusing on plasma business, but a lot of hope was put in the BT62. And just what I read is that there was no put option done by Immunogen, and you just told everything is cut off except the studies which are ongoing. What is the value of BT62 at the 30th of March 2017? Because I have no idea, because Immunogen said, no, we are not interested. Is it possible that another partner or interest is coming up?
Okay, so good. So this message can be seen as a positive news or negative news. So we kept our press release very neutral. You know, some people said, you know, this is also positive that they do not opt in, because then BT-062, they have full rights, worldwide rights, available from today onwards. And before, there were no, the US rights were split. Yeah, this was seen as a disadvantage by some people. But we took it very neutral and say, okay, that's a fact. That they came back, they got the study, and they know they have to invest half of the future development costs, and they have to pay us this, I think, $15 million. And they decided, because they have a lot of own stuff ongoing, and then they took the decision, because they had exactly 4 weeks' time after they got the report, then they decided that they are not going to exercise this opt-in period. And, of course, now there are different ways how you are going to assess a value. What is the current value of BT-062? And our colleagues from business development say they are working with VCs, whether there is an option that we can spin out the monoclonal antibodies or not, or whether we have someone which has an interest because it fits to their pipeline. Yeah. So, and we are, of course, we are doing an internal assessment, and when we go into this negotiation, we have a certain assumption, but the assumption is only valid as long as the other party shares the assumption.
But there is still activity inside BioTest.
With partnering, yeah. So of course, you know. So we are working on it. We are approaching VCs. We are approaching other companies. We are sharing the data with them, and we are discussing. Point is, as you can imagine, we need also to go back to Dry Eye. You know, we have also other commitments, not only with our employees, to talk with them. You can assume that there is a high degree of uncertainty. Therefore, and also other people are waiting for our calls. So therefore, I would really like to ask you that we can stop after the next two questions. Yeah? We have to go. Yeah.
Alexander Kell, Bloomberg. Still one question regarding the kind of the history of this bid that still isn't a bid. Yeah. For how long have the talks now been ongoing? When did they start, and were you approached first or one of the shareholders, or can you comment on that?
Okay, of course we do not disclose everything, but let's say it's not as old. We are discussing. We took on the discussion when we noticed it's serious. Yeah, so that there is a serious interest, and that also the overall value which could be offered could be attractive for the company. Then we really put more emphasis and started a discussion. Yeah, so it's not as old. But I cannot give you the exact date. So we had a discussion in supervisory board. You know, we informed and said, right, is this the right thing to do? Is this because we are evaluating all options. As a company, you have to look at all options. Yeah, we have to look what are we doing, you know, how is the competitive environment is developing. Then you have a strategic plan, and then you're assessing all options. And we have to decide what is in the best interest of the company. And they are coming unserious or also other approaches where we clearly say, forget it. You know, this is this makes no sense, and we are wasting our time. But in this case, it was clear, you know, this was very well thought through, and we thought this could be of interest. Therefore, we embarked on negotiations, and we are still negotiating.
So have there been other potential interested parties in the last year? Where you said, no, this is not serious, or this is clearly not in the interest of the company. So were there other interested parties in the last year?
I do not say every day, but in particular, of course, there are always from different angles, people are coming, serious or unserious, and this is not the only request. But as this one was, it was thought through, and then it's our obligation that if someone's serious and is coming and it's thought through, that the obligation of us to look into it and to assess it and to decide.
Thank you.
All right. So thank you very much for coming. Thank you very much for listening. We would like to invite you to a snack outside and see you back in May for the next results. Thank you very much.